May it please the court. The issue in this case is whether the court has jurisdiction over a claim for the inverse condemnation of dirt excavated from an easement acquired for highway purposes. There are three reasons why the Court of Appeals judgment should be reversed. First, the easement includes the right to use the materials excavated. Second, the Brownlows were already compensated for the dirt. And third, the Court of Appeals decision contradicts sound public policy. The general rule is that an easement for roadway purposes includes the right to take all the materials in the easement and can use them to construct, repair, or improve a roadway.
How far down does this right that you claim to use all the materials from the easement go? I assume for the retention pond, they only went down a few feet, relatively speaking. Would it continue down 1,000 feet? Would it include valuable minerals down there? How far down does your argument extend?
Well, Justice Wainwright, pardon me. In this case, the depth extends only to the extent granted in the easement. Pardon me. And the construction site plan notes very clearly that the cut volume for this particular easement is 87,544 feet. And I can't offer you all of the cubic meters is the amount that will be pulled out of that easement. I can't stand here and do the math, unfortunately, to tell you exactly how deep that will be, but I believe that this particular pond is about 12 feet deep. It's a 12-acre sized pond with a depth of about 12 feet.
So are you saying if the construction then went deeper than 12 feet, you'd acknowledge that something was owed to the Brownlows?
Sure, because we're constrained by the limits of the easement that we've acquired.
If in that first 12 feet there was a gold deposit?
We cannot take those rights. They're precluded by statute for the state to take those types of interests, and we specifically exclude those in our petitions for condemnation.
Can you be a little more specific? There's a statute that precludes what?
The taking of oil, gas, and other mineral rights. And so when we write our petitions for condemnation, we specifically exclude those from anything we can take in the easement.
Does it matter that this is a mitigation-type detention facility? And the reason I ask that is we look at the specific terms of the grant. And the grant here says the state seeks and prays for the acquisition for highway purposes. It doesn't say for highway construction purposes. So if land is taken that the highway is going to be constructed on, then, you know, an argument, I can understand the argument that whatever you take out to construct the highway is included within the grant. But when we say for highway purposes and it's a mitigation pond, isn't that a different scenario?
Well, no, Justice O'Neill, it's not a different scenario because a detention pond is indeed a highway purpose. The Texas Transportation Code authorizes...
It's a highway purpose, but it's not a highway construction purpose. And most of these cases that you've cited have talked about for highway construction purposes, and you're not using this piece of property for construction purposes. You're using it for highway purposes, but more in mitigation as opposed to for construction.
That's right. It is for mitigation, but for the construction of the highway, the mitigation pond wouldn't be needed. It's necessary because of the construction of the highway, because we've taken dirt and put more dirt into the floodplain. As a result, we have to offset that dirt with a detention facility. So highway, the detention pond's necessary.
I understand that, but it just seems to me like a different thing, that if you're going to condemn land to use the land for construction purposes, that the dirt, I could see that being included within the terms of the plan. But here, it seems to be serving a different purpose. It helps with the highway, but it doesn't really deal with construction of it.
Well, the dirt that we're taking from the detention pond will be used elsewhere in construction of the highway.
That's the whole question.
Right.
In fact, it was used some miles down the road. It wasn't even used at that site. Am I correct on that?
No, actually, Your Honor, the record reflects that it was used directly adjacent to the pond. In the testimony of Michael Christley, who is the TxDOT project engineer for this project, he was asked by Mr. Noel whether or not it was being used next to it. And indeed it is. It's an adjacent, I believe it's about 600 feet from the end of the pond to the San Bernard River, and it was used there.
But it wasn't on the easement itself.
It wasn't on the easement. The pond fills the entire easement. And then the dirt was taken from the easement and used on the construction of the highway adjacent to that easement.
And lacking that material for improvement of the road, the state would otherwise have had to buy the material?
The material would have to come from someplace, yes. That's correct.
Could the state take that filler soil and sell it?
Under a 1990 Attorney General opinion, yes, it could, and I recognize that's not binding on the court, but it is, of course, persuasive authority. And under that opinion, pardon me, the Attorney General dealt with the question of whether or not the removal of trees and shrubs from a county right-of-way was an unconstitutional taking. And the answer was no, and they relied on the Brown and Mullaly cases, which of course we're relying on in answering that question. But the thing that they added was, if an easement owner may take trees and shrubs and dispose of them by destruction, it may dispose of them in another fashion, including sale, without compensation to the owner.
So I could give the state an easement to cross my land, the state could decide, let's say I've got a 1,000-acre ranch, the state could decide to take the top 10 feet of soil or gravel off that land, sell it for profit, and all I get is the value of the easement without, at least from my standpoint, knowing that there's going to be some sale of valuable parts of that property that the easement is on.
Well, first, the easement would have to expressly state that purpose, and TxDOT can't go out and just condemn detention facilities, you know, separate and apart from a roadway construction project. So there would have to be the authority to take that type of easement and define within that easement what could be taken. But in addition to that, when your land was valued for your easement in that particular scenario that you give, the before and after rule requires that in measuring the value of that easement, we look at the difference between the value of the property prior to the acquisition and the value to the property after. And the value to the property after would have to reflect the absence of that dirt, as was done in this case.
So your fundamental position is that this easement put the landowner on notice under the law that the gravel and dirt that was on that easement could be used by the state for any purpose, sale or highway construction. But that is notice that the owner had when entering this transaction.
Yes, Your Honor, the easement, pardon me, in conjunction with the, well, actually, if you turn to the agreed judgment embodies the purpose for which the acquisition is being made, and the acquisition is for highway purposes. The acquisition can come through either a fee or an easement. In this case, the easement's specific purpose is a detention facility. And by virtue of describing the detention facility that is to be opened up, constructed, and maintained, that certainly tells you that there will be an excavation of dirt.
Is this true with, is this how the state handles condemnation when, for example, the easement would take property that is lined with oak trees or other timber for a side road or for another detention pond? In that instance, would the state own the trees and get to sell those, or is that negotiated when the original condemnation happens?
Well, the fee owner still retains ownership in the trees. However, the state's interest
I'm saying the trees are removed okay. during the process of constructing the highway or building the detention pond. Who owns those trees?
Well, the fee owner owns the trees. However, the state's interest in promoting a public use, such as construction and maintenance of its highways, overrides the individual fee interest, property interest in those trees. So if those are in the state's right-of-way and the state needs to clear those in order to maintain its roadways, it may do so.
But who's entitled to the lumber? I mean, if the trees were sold for a profit, I think that's the important question, then who would be entitled to the profit from the lumber sale?
Well, presumably TxDOT would be entitled to anything that it had to pay to have those have the trees taken down. But that's not the issue we have, obviously. In this case, we've got something where we've got materials under the ground that are not being pulled up and sold for a profit. They're being used
elsewhere. You have to consider
elsewhere.
The broad implications of your case, not just your case. I'm also interested in who gets the profit from the lumber made from the trees.
Well, in the instance, pardon me, of that type of case, I assume that TxDOT could either try to work out something with the landowner or perhaps
your argument would be, I think, if it's consistent with what you're arguing here, is that the state can sell the trees for profit or use them for construction in other areas. I mean, the state would own the trees because that was kind of incident to that easement.
That is true, and especially under the Attorney General opinion where it talks about disposal of trees.
What's the citation? What's the opinion number for that opinion?
It's JM 1241, Your Honor.
That's a long time ago.
I'm sorry, say that again.
It's 1990. What? JM 1241.
So your rationale would be that the owner of the land would have considered the trees. And who gets the profit from the trees in valuing these? Is that your argument?
That's true. Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. I mean, certainly anything that's taken in an easement should be valued at the time we pay for that easement, and it should be considered, and the landowner will have been paid.
And what's the evidence that that occurred here, or do we have any, that the soil was part of the negotiation that resulted in this agreed judgment?
Well, the evidence, Your Honor, again, is the express language of the easement itself that talks about the opening up, constructing and maintaining of a detention facility, as well as the construction plan sheet, which very clearly indicates the cut volume that's going to come from this particular. In order to dig this facility, they're going to have to cut a certain amount of dirt out of the ground. And that was initialed, pardon me, by the Brownlow's attorney. So they were aware of the situation. This was attached to the petition for condemnation early on. So that was known for some time.
Is the judgment language typical? Is this a typical?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
You use it all the time?
Yes, sir, I do.
The Brownlow's claim that the dirt is worth $300,000+. Do you agree with that?
Well, Your Honor, I honestly don't know what it would be worth because I don't know what the current market for that would be in Brazoria County. I believe they're basing that on calculations they've done related to what we've paid our contractor who dug the dirt. But our contractor's bids come in as competitive bids, and they base their prices on how much dirt they're going to need to get from the facility that we offer, in this case this pond, and what they may need to acquire somewhere else. And so the bids fluctuate somewhat, but if they needed more.
Well, let's just say that it was worth $300,000. I mean, purposes of argument, just the dirt itself. It would seem to be a pretty bad result here to get $50,000 for a piece of property when the dirt alone was worth $300,000+.
Well, it would be a bad result, Your Honor, if that was the way things normally worked. But the Perot case tells us that if you have any damages, you are to present those at the time of the condemnation. And as I mentioned, they knew how much dirt was being removed at the time of the condemnation. And if there was a market for that dirt in Brazoria County, as they are now claiming, they could have easily found out about what that sells for and come up with some estimate of damages. They don't need to be precise at that point, but they need to come up with some idea of their damages.
Point to what language would you point to in the judgment that says that it's okay for the state to take material off the property and use it somewhere else?
In the agreed judgment, I'll turn to page 2. It's in paragraph 1, and it says the plaintiff sought and prayed for the acquisition for highway purposes through this permanent easement, the detention facility. And so this language, coupled with the existing case law, Brown and Mullaly, which expressly state that we may take materials from one street to another or one roadway to another for the use in improving, constructing, maintaining, makes that clear.
In the decretal portions of the judgment, what would you point to?
The permanent easement, pardon me, it's in part 5 on page 7. It's ordered, adjudged, and decreed that a permanent easement in the land described in Exhibit A attached here 2 for the purpose of opening, constructing, and maintaining a detention facility. And let's see. We've got our highway language in here as well. I mean, I don't think that it's necessary that it be in these decreeing portions as well, since we've got the language here in the agreed judgment that everyone signed off on.
But somebody looking at this judgment that wouldn't have a background that you have and can look at this and say, okay, yeah, sure, you can look at this and it's easy to see that somebody has a right to take that material off the site and use it for some other purpose without compensation. You think that's reasonable?
I think it's reasonable.
By reading this language?
I think it's reasonable when you read the entire agreed judgment together, because you do read what those highway purposes are. It expressly states that we're seeking the acquisition for highway purposes.
Okay. What's the difference between an easement where you can take it and sell it and fee title?
What's the difference between the two? Well, for the fee, we would have all rights. It'd be very clear every right that we had. We could do anything we wished essentially with the project.
Isn't that what you're doing with the 87,000 cubic feet of dirt?
Well, no, Your Honor, because it's limited by the easement language. It's limited by the number of meters that are depicted in the plat, and it's also limited by the language that we use in the easement. And I see I'm nearly out of time. Can I answer more questions?
Are there any further questions? Thank you, Ms. McLean. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court. Mr. Arnott will present argument for the respondents.
Mr. Chief Justice, justices of the court, in the state's brief, they use the word roadway and road 45 times. In their reply brief, they use it 13 times. In their opening statement, I lost count. I believe it was six. I did not keep an count of the number of questions from the bench about roadway. However, nowhere in this judgment, after the words of grant, ordered, adjudged, and decreed, under the judgment under review, is the word road or roadway used. It is conspicuously absent from this judgment and the language under review. In interpreting this judgment, we will apply the basic principles of contract construction. We will give words their plain, ordinary, generally accepted meaning, and there is no ambiguity. If we turn to the judgment, not in the recitations of what was sought, I would suggest that this court, in paragraph 2, where the state contends that they sought and prayed for acquisition for highway purposes, that was not given in the judgment. They may have asked for it. This court could as easily substitute the words cause of action for emotional distress. When we go to the words of grant of this judgment, it says, it is ordered, adjudged, and decreed. And this is what the language that the court must construe. A permanent easement in and to the property described in Exhibit A for the purposes of opening, constructing, and maintaining a detention facility, in, over, and across the land, together with the right at all times of ingress, egress, regress, in and over across the land for the purposes of making additions to improvements on and repairs to the said detention for any part thereof.
Okay, let's take that language.
All right.
And if you apply the before and after rule, the value of the easement before the taking and the value of the easement after the taking considering its use, which would be a whole.
All right.
Justice, wasn't that what he was compensating?
All right. Justice O'Neill, the state tries to add words to the plain meaning of this contract in three areas. One is a misapplication of the damage rule, which I think is perhaps the most insidious. The second is by adding extraneous facts that are not in evidence and have not yet to be tried. And the third is trying to extend by implication the scope of this easement, specifically to address your before and after damage model. Think with me, if you will. A damage model never defines property ownership. Rather, property ownership defines the type of damage model that you use. If what is granted is the right to open, construct, and maintain a detention pond, then that is the before and the after that you are concerned with. And yes, that is before and after. But what happens if you expend or try to enlarge the scope, if you will, of the specific easement by taking additional property from this easement that's not under the scope and using it somewhere else for a different purpose?
Well, but the question is what's implied within the grant.
Correct.
And so if it's before is property without a detention facility and after is
property
with a hole, then implied is that the dirt's going to go away, and it's the, wouldn't that be encompassed within the before and after rule?
What is implied is that the dirt can be used for any purposes for opening, the dirt's taken out, maintaining, building tank walls around it, repairing, using that dirt to repair it as those walls crumble, not for a different purpose. The only thing that flows from the implication, and as the state said in the Brown and the Mullally case, the early, this is not a bar ditch case. This is not a case where the dirt is removed from the sides of the road and used to maintain the road, or once that the state has a right to the road, to take that fill and repair the road in other places. This is a mitigation pond required by the Corps of Engineers, related yes to the Highway Department, but not by to the Highway Development, but not by implication. It's required to take the overfill of the San Bernard River, and it's required by the, it's a mitigation pond. So as San Bernard leaves its banks, I guess this thing fills up, and then it slowly trickles back. And the dirt is to be used for those purposes. Now,
I suppose in the proceedings in the trial court, this problem never came up.
This is not developed because the only easement, Justice, was for this detention pond. And let me quickly
So I'm wondering, in different circumstances, if we just have this easement, but the property is not 250 acres, it's 20 acres. It's just a little bigger than the detention pond itself. And the landowner couldn't take the dirt.
Correct.
Could the state force the landowner to take the dirt and haul it off at his own expense?
I think that's a very good question. We're not proposing a rule of law where the state can come along and say, we want to create a detention pond, and then turn around to the fee owner and say, now get our dirt out of our hole.
Yeah.
we're not implying that.
Well,
we're
implying that they have. I understand or not, but I'm wondering that's not involved here.
Well, I think by statute that the state has like 10 years to use this soil for the purposes in the easement, and if they don't, then it reverts to the fee owner. And in that situation.
I mean, you could. So the state then could make the fee owner take the dirt.
Probably. And I can't imagine a situation where the fee owner wouldn't want the dirt. As a matter of fact, the fee.
I can easily imagine it. He has a house right next door, and he doesn't want anything to know about dirt or anything. He's just letting the state have the pond because they can take it anyway. But he doesn't, the last thing he wants is 87,000 cubic meters of dirt is right.
Well, evidently there's a market for it because the state wants it. Yeah. But let me sort of address something that does concern me, and that is this concept of a double recovery, number one, and does this really pass the smell test? This is not a situation where the Brownlow's plate got you and sat silent. This is a situation where they entered into a contract and an agreed judgment. And what was the purpose of that? Sole purpose of the scope of that easement. And when they recognized at that time that dirt was going to be not removed from the hole, but removed from the hole and not used for purposes of the mitigation pond, but relocated somewhere down the road for unrelated purposes, that is a second taking. And always.
And help me with this. There are several numbers in the briefing, dollar figures.
Correct.
It costs something to dig the dirt up.
That's correct.
To do the excavation.
Correct.
And then the dirt is worth something once you dig it up.
Correct.
Is there any way to compare in the numbers that exist what that is? I mean, is the dirt worth more than it costs to dig it up?
We know in easement law that we're not to get the enhanced value, would you say, of removing it. Okay, this is the value before and after, and now that you take it out, all of a sudden it's got this enhanced value as processed gravel, for example, that's not included in, and that, of course, is not what we are arguing. We contend that the state has absolute right to use that soil for the
purpose. I understand, but let me just focus on one question.
Okay.
And that is, you know, it's sitting out there and there's the field, and it's going to cost something to excavate it.
Correct.
And then once it's excavated, you can sell it and it'll be worth this much. Is there anything in the record that gives any comparison of those numbers?
There are numbers in the record that are recited, but there are no findings of fact concerning those numbers. The findings of fact, they're contained in the judgment, contrary to 299A, but there's no findings of fact. And this really is a question of law. And this was a jurisdictional question where no facts were presented at the trial court.
So if there had been, it seemed like it wouldn't be. I mean, if the landowner were claiming the dirt, he'd only be entitled to the net value of it.
I think that's for a fact finder. And I think upon remand, that may well be determined. But to me, this offer and acceptance and what the commission did is very much a collateral attack on an existing judgment, sort of like the settlement rule. I can think of all sorts of reasons, but not to consider any of these extraneous facts. But I come back to that this is a question of law, contract interpretation, plain meaning, rule, question of law for the court to decide what does this term for detention purposes.
There's an amicus brief, and I think it was from a water district or
correct,
something like that, that says if we went your way, what there'd be a byproduct, and that is that these condemning agencies or authorities would condemn the land, the entire land, not just an easement, if they're going to be burdened with this new fee. You know that it would work for your case and benefit your client today, but in the future it would hurt landowners because there would be more than just an easement taken, but condemnation of the whole bigger portion of the property.
I don't think that the sort of fear of hysterics that this is going to damage the law of easements is well founded. First of all, this is an agreed judgment. This is a contract between two consenting parties who were represented by attorneys. The state certainly knew how to provide for this excess use and put language in their contract to expand the scope of this easement when they were contracting and making this agreement. I don't think, perhaps, contrary to the state's position that this is the same agreement that you're going to, the same language you're going to find in every judgment. I don't think so. I think this is a very narrow case. I think it should be read very narrowly, and I think it should be decided very narrowly.
If the soil that was...
Let me just follow up on that question. I think, would your answer also be that could just be put in the purpose language? That this would be different if it said, for the purpose of opening, constructing, and maintaining a detention facility for the purposes of highway construction.
Correct. I believe that language would expand the scope of the easement, and the Brownlows would not have a complaint. Mr. Wainwright.
If the soil were not used for some valuable purpose with the liquidated value attached, it was... The detention pond was excavated and the soil was all used for the retaining walls, then your clients wouldn't be here today making their argument, would they?
That's correct.
So it's only when the excavated soil is used or sold for some valuable purpose that...
Well, not sold for a valuable purpose, but used outside the scope of the easement. I think your example...
Of course, it has to be of value. If it's used for something that's not of value, then you don't have a claim for damages.
It's an unconstitutional taking, and I would assert there is no de minimis infringement upon constitutional rights. Okay? But I think your example of what happens if they dug this up and they found a mineral present, for example, gold, in the soil, very appropriate. Now, the state says, yeah, well, we have a statute that says we're not to consider that. But that is a perfect example of one of those that we didn't really think about this being there when we took the soil out, and the enhanced value is not needed for the purposes of constructing a detention pond. So Even though that is treated by statute, a lot of these are treated by statute, I think we have to return to the language of the agreed judgment.
What is the difference in value between this easement and the fee minus the minerals?
I don't know that that's been determined. I think that is a fact issue that may be determined. And I don't know whether it's germane or not, Justice Heck, because we always know in subsequent takings in these situations, it turns out that when you have to go back and redo something, it tends to be more expensive than it would have the original. And it's not lost on me that the state started this condemnation over 2 years, approximately 2 years before their highway plan, as they talk about, was initiated. So in their hurry to do this, sometimes mistakes are made. And I think also in answering your question, Justice Heck, what would happen if the state decided, we made that bend too big, we need to straighten this road out. So we need to come back and we need 5 more acres here. You know, do they have the right to do that without, that's an additional taking. You asked before and after, Justice O'Neill, and I'm thinking, they of the easement cases where they retain the right to put in a 2-inch flow line, and it's buried underground. Now they want to come back and put in a 15-inch high-pressure gas transmission line. That's outside the scope of the taking. On the surface, once the line's buried, I doubt that anybody could tell much difference.
Well, now that I'm thinking about the before and after in light of your argument, would it be fair to say your argument would be that the way you would value the after would be if the soil were used and were still on the site for the opening, constructing, and maintaining the facility, then you'd evaluate the after with the soil still on the property?
We've been compensated for that. I think the original taking using the soil.
That's what I'm saying. You'd say the after would include the dirt being on the property because it's to be used for the opening, constructing, maintaining.
Right.
Well, let me ask this then. What if they take outside the confines of what they need for the detention and they take another 10 or 15 acres and pile the dirt up 25 feet? Over there, and that they don't, the dirt they don't need to construct the detention center and build it and protect it, because some people go swimming in those things and they drown, so they have to do all those things. You got this big pile of dirt over here.
I think that
not being used for anything other than just being sit there because they don't know, they can't take it and use it for a road. Can the landowner take it, or is that the state's dirt?
I think that the state, if they take the additional acreage, or let's say they put the soil on the original easement. Remember, a permanent easement can terminate also. At some time, this is not a fee, it's going to come back. And I would assume that the dirt has to be returned from somewhere. But under statutes, my understanding, the state has 10 years to make use of that soil for those purposes. I would assume that it would be like a tank dam, where you take a bulldozer and you dig out a divot in the ground and you use that soil to build what we would call a tank dam. All right.
And you're saying if they build it twice as high but leave the dirt there, it's still all right?
Yes, we would absolutely concede with that. You know, Justice O'Neill, in looking at your Marcus Cable case.
I thought you might like that case.
Yeah, well. This is what I like.
The intent of the parties,
as expressed in the grant, determines the scope of the interest conveyed, and we focus on the terms of the granting clause. We're not here trying to expand the law or ask for any rule that is different than exists. The state relies on extraneous facts and their pleadings are proven. Again, they attach an affidavit. That must mean there must be some sort of facts. And if there are facts, then how can it be dismissed for want of jurisdiction? They want to go beyond the actual scope of the of the plain meaning of this language for roadway purposes. And finally, they want to confuse the damages. So let me just say this in closing. The state took a permanent easement for a single purpose of building a water detention facility. The text is clear, it's unambiguous. What is not conveyed is retained, and the Court of Appeals opinion below neither modifies or changes any of the law of easements in Texas or any of the cases cited by the state. It correctly applies the law to the facts in this individual case. And we respectfully would ask this court to affirm the opinion below.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Arnott.
I'd like to begin by just addressing a couple of the questions that came up during counsel's presentation. First, Justice Hecht, you had asked whether or not the state would be able to force a landowner to remove dirt. The answer to that is no. And as is probably apparent, had we left the dirt on their land because it wouldn't fit within the confines of the easement, we would have been in a similar situation to the Staffers case, which is cited in our brief, where we would have had to then condemn an additional easement to place the dirt that came out of the detention pond. Also, with respect to whether or not the Brownlows were appropriately compensated for the dirt, to answer what Justice O'Neill had been asking earlier, why isn't it worth $300,000, or would it be? And the answer is the dirt is valued as it lies in place in the ground. In this case, that value was included in the $55,000 that they were awarded for the easement. The $300,000 number that they're giving you, while I can't give you all of the calculations that went into it, is based on the cost of extracting that dirt, compacting that dirt, and it's probably around $300,000 to do that. That's probably reasonable.
But it does appear from the decretal language of the agreed judgment that it's fairly specific that the easement is for the purpose of opening, constructing, and maintaining the detention facility. And in fact, if you go on down to the right of ingress, egress, and regress, it's for the purpose of adding to, improving, and repairing the detention facility. So there's nothing about going in and removing dirt and taking it off-site, and there's nothing about the use of dirt for construction, highway construction purposes.
In the only language in the decreeing paragraphs, and specifically in paragraph 6, at the very bottom of page 7, it discusses the fact that this property is for a permanent easement for public use. The public use is defined and laid out elsewhere in this agreed judgment, which is the highway purposes.
Where? Because all I see
on page
paragraph 1, all it says is the court finds that the plaintiff sought and prayed for acquisition for highway purposes, and it just sort of quotes the petition. Is that what you're relying on?
Yes, Your Honor, because highway purposes are broad, and the types of purposes that may be allowed are defined by the Texas Transportation Code. And this purpose, the detention facility, is specifically set out in 203.052B8 of the Transportation Code. So if the Transportation Commission determines that it's necessary and convenient for the construction of a roadway or for roadway purposes to get an easement in order to build a detention facility, they have the authority to make that determination under the Texas Transportation Code. If I may quickly touch on the public policy concerns, I know that counsel has said that we're getting a little worked up over the implications of this case, but actually the points raised in the amicus brief, along with some others, are very valid concerns. I'll address two of the main problems with upholding the Court of Appeals opinion in this case. First, there will be multiple proceedings potentially for condemnation, because the state may take an easement and need to go back in a year or two and open up or improve or widen a roadway. Well, when they do that, they're potentially subject to an inverse condemnation claim every time they do that for the easement materials. The other really important concern here that is—
I'm not sure I understood that.
I'm sorry. If we have to go back and make any improvements to a roadway, and that requires, for example, widening the roadway and widening into the easement, We again at that point will be digging up some materials from the easement, and at that point in time we may have a landowner who owns the fee come back and say, your easement doesn't entitle you to do that, you owe me for the dirt underneath. And
but, but couldn't you settle that at the front end and just say, we get to use the dirt? The respondent says if the decretal portion of this judgment said for highway purposes, he wouldn't be here.
Yes, Your Honor, we could do that at the front end. The problem is we already have several easements existing out there that are written this way, and they may be subject to these types of inverse claims for as long as the statute of limitations for those.
But that would just be a problem with the crafting of the judgment. I mean, how would a landowner, if they didn't want the dirt taken off the property, I presume they could have certainly made it clear that this doesn't include excavated dirt. But, you know, if they had intended just to limit the use of the dirt, it seems like they did, opening, constructing, and maintaining.
Well, again, Your Honor, our position is that the detention facility is, in fact, part of a larger highway purpose, and the Brown and Mullaly cases make clear, and have been long-standing cases, that it's exactly what you can do. You can take that, and you can take the dirt anywhere on a project, use it elsewhere, and other commentators such as CJS, ALR, have upheld this general rule that an easement for highway purposes includes the right to take those materials.
You had these two policy arguments. One was multiple proceedings. What was the second?
I'm sorry. It was essentially that we're going to end up in a position where water utilities, like the ones who filed the amicus brief, are going to have to condemn greater interest than what they actually need, and you're going to end up in a position where they're paying more money and taking more property than they need, and the property owner is left with less rights in their property.
Or they're just going to pay for it.
Pardon? I'm sorry.
Or they're just going to put the language in. I mean, it could be that this was just not drafted well. I mean, everybody says the sky is falling, but it sounds like the rule that the other side wants could easily remedy the problem by including it in the language of the...
Perhaps for future cases, but for the cases that we have, or the easements we have outstanding now, not so much. And I see that I'm out of time, so we respectfully request that you reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals and affirm the dismissal of this case by the trial court.
Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will take another brief recess.